Hello, and welcome to The Alchemist with Isis Jade, the keys to living your very best life in alignment with your mind, body, and spirit. My name is Isis Jade, and I am delighted that you are here. I am the formulator behind Alchemist Co. and Warrior Relief, two brands focused on helping people use bioenergized products to help you live your very best life. I am an alignment coach, licensed spiritual counselor, holistic medicine practitioner, author, clairvoyant, and energy alchemist. I have over a dozen certifications in various healing arts, and I also carry PhDs in bioenergetics, holistic medicine, and traditional naturopathy, and I've written over 10 books. This podcast is full of immediate strategies that you can apply today to help you bring yourself back into full alignment and live your very best life, fully embodied in mind, body, and spirit, through a variety of holistic tools, including energy healing, aromatherapy, herbs, naturopathic processes, secret universal laws, visualization tips, how to break any bad habit fast, and how to completely reframe your entire self-concept and more. So if you are ready for your total mind, body, and spirit level up, then brilliant soul, you're in the right place. Just take a really big breath in and let it out. And release it. And one more deep breath in. And hold it. And send that breath all the way to the tips of your fingers. And release it. Good. One more deep cleansing breath. Hold it in. And this one, send to the very tips of your toes, cycling energy all the way through your being. And now let it out. Deep cleansing breath. That's right. Let's get some stagnation moving. Let's get this energy going. Yeah, there you go. Wonderful. I am so deeply grateful that you are here with me today. And this is going to take you on a journey into the very center of your being and give you some tools and ideas to put into immediate practice in your life. While I've been involved in advanced mysticism and esotericism, as well as practical spiritual philosophy for years, none of these really have important functions to serve except if they give you a gift of practical application and how to live your life better or more freely. Otherwise, they're not really much use outside of theoretical or hypothetical explorations. I also want to say, if anyone ever speaks to you of truth or of true principles or true values or the true spiritual path or there's only one way, or if they claim higher truth or higher ideas, or they claim to be a guru or a prophet, but you cannot seem to find a real, truly valuable practical application to bring those things into practice in your life right here and right now. If those ideas, if those philosophies are not giving you an experience that enables you to free yourself to explore, experience, or create the life that you're here to do, the life that you're here to be, right here, right now in this moment, if there is no way to employ what has been taught, then it only contains hypothetical value. Then it only contains theoretical hopes and wishes. And honestly, what guide our hypotheses and philosophical discussions outside of a university or outside of a perceptual exploration? Not much, in my opinion. So at the same time, if you listen to this session, but you cannot find it within yourself to apply what's been taught, there will be no tangible value received. And before we begin, I'd like to ask you if you've ever had one of those days where you've found yourself fighting with something. Let's say maybe fighting with a computer or your cell phone or a software program or a lawnmower or some kind of mechanical object that inanimate object that just seems to not want to work no matter what it is that you're trying to do. And you've gotten to a point where you're just so darn frustrated that you just lose it. And, well, you start yelling at the darn thing. Maybe you've never done this, or maybe you've done this. Maybe you've even gotten to the point where you've called this device or this inanimate object, I don't know, stupid or idiot or god darn it, I just can't get this thing to work. And it doesn't want to function properly for you. And you just seem to be fighting it, and you get so frustrated. You know, I have. And the fact is, I get frustrated about many great things around me. They just don't seem to flow properly, or things don't just seem to work as they should. And gosh darn it, those stupid designers who designed that stupid freaking thing, why did they create it that way? Why did they make it so stupid to have to operate? Why did they make it so darn difficult? I find frustration in a myriad of stupid things that stupid people, and I put quotes around this, designed or developed. And my husband will agree and attest to this, and probably will laugh at this because he gets the brunt of most of this. I'm one of those people who used to yell at inanimate objects, I kid you not, all the time. I'd get so darn frustrated that I would blow a fuse and then run and whine to my husband or my kids or a friend, that darn thing just won't work right. Gosh darn it, I'm just so frustrated. Ugh, it's just stupid. It's dumb. And then I'd walk off and go do something else and eventually cool my little toes off and come back and find that it's actually working just as expected. It's just that I did not understand it. I misunderstood it. Contemplate this for a moment, because, you know, whenever we've encountered those times where we fought tooth and nail with an object or a thing or a situation or a circumstance, we're actually fighting something else inside. And I want you to think about this as we talk about this session today, because anger and frustration are two of the biggest issues that people come up against in their life. It's something that I've been struggling with and fighting over for much of my life. And I want to ask you, what is it you're really fighting with? What is it you're really fighting over? What is it you're really fighting for? A friend of mine just recently concluded a years-long battle, a fight over something, a very legal dysfunction. And it went all the way to the very top, and it was a long, arduous, justified fight. And it actually ended very negatively and unfortunate. But it also kind of speaks to this as well. You see, we think that we're fighting with other people, or we think we're fighting with situations that we put outside of ourselves, and they're in the wrong and we're right, and things should just flow and things should just work out for the best, right? And the fact is that we're not ever really fighting whatever's in front of us. Although we might say we are, we might believe we are, we might be resisting the fact that there might be something deeper within us. It's always them, it's never us. And I even have a friend who tells me that I often retreat too frequently within myself, not understanding that maybe it's the other person's issue and not mine at all. And I thought about that and I contemplated on that for a while. And I realized, while there may be aspects of that that are true, normally what I have found is that whenever I've come into a conflict, it's because there is a conflict or a resistance that I'm experiencing within myself. What we are really fighting with when we're fighting with an inanimate object like our cell phone or a computer, or we're fighting with a person, or we're engaged in a legal battle or any kind of situation or circumstance, what we're fighting with is something that we don't understand about ourselves, much less about the situation we find ourselves within. We may blame a thing that is absolutely, completely blameless. We call it names, condemn it to a fiery pit, say that it's evil or bad or negative or greedy or selfish or dysfunctional or it's broken, you know. And even break it. We might even break it, might even break relationships. I've done this. We might even break the computer itself in our seemingly aggravation with the thing itself. But underlying that thing is really our aggravation with ourselves. When we run into something outside of us where we've reached a point where we just can't seem to get past our own limits, we turn on the person, the object, the situation, and blame it for whatever it is we believe we are going through, rather than accept the situation as it stands and move on. We create fights where no fight really needs to exist. We create arguments where an argument really doesn't need to exist. We create drama where drama and chaos really doesn't need to exist. The key here is to understand that when we engage in drama and conflict and battle or issues or fights, we must have within ourselves containing a belief that which nourishes the seed for this frustration, this aggravation, this chaos, this drama, a belief that something within us might be lacking. If you're already frustrated and you don't walk away, it will in turn raise our level of impatience, which in turn heightens our aggravation with the thing, object, situation that we have fixated upon until we reach a boiling point. And here we are, engaged in a war, in a fight, in the midst of a drama with our cell phone, our Blu-ray player, our computer, our lawnmower, a dog, or a piece of art that we're working on, a musical instrument, a table, a chair. How many of us have hit our thumb with a hammer and said, "God damn it, that stupid hammer"? We really meant, "Gosh darn it, our stupid selves," right? Here's the thing. We're always in a fight with something. We're always arguing about something. We're always creating drama over something. We're always creating chaos over something. And therein lies the key to our own sense of suffering. Our triggers that lead us in an automated response to fight or fly or flee. We don't understand a thing, so we get frustrated. Frustration leads to impatience, which leads to aggravation, and we begin to assault the thing, the person, the situation, either verbally or physically or both. Frustration, however, contains something else within it. And something at the heart of frustration really feeds our willingness to allow our buttons to be pushed and trigger us to fight. And this is the human condition. Because honestly, what do we fight for? Well, we fight to cling to an idea or a picture or an ultimate dream that we have in our minds of what we've been longing for or hoping for or reaching for. We might fight to repress others, to control others, to liberate others, to rescue others. We fight because something or someone said something that we don't like, or some situation speaks to something that we hate or repressed within ourselves. And we are always very watchful for things that might indicate that we're about to be hurt, abused, victimized. Oh, we're always on watch for that. We fight to make sure that people see where they're wrong and we are definitely in the right. We'll fight to resolve something that has happened in our past, even if it's been long in our past, long far away from us. Might even be in a past life that we're still fighting for. We might fight to avenge someone or revenge a perceived wrong in our life. That's what many legal battles are started over, because we've been wronged in some way, even though we've signed on the dotted line with open eyes, knowing that our infinite wisdom, that we have encountered this before. We fight constantly. We're so addicted to fighting. And honestly, you know, if you can raise your hand at this, I'm going to ask you this. Haven't you ever argued with people or things that aren't even here anymore, over situations that have long, long since passed and moved on? Haven't you fought with things and situations and people that aren't even in your life anymore? There is inside of us a very unseen dynamic that we each are struggling with. And every time we confront this aspect of ourselves in the midst of that toaster or that conflicted individual or that situation, or that computer, or that purchase we made. We feel so defensive, and we feel so aggravated and so angry. And the heart of all of that is fear. We just cannot help but trigger an addictive pattern to fight. Unfortunately, the minute we begin to fight, we lose the battle with ourselves. Whenever we run into something and we fight, it's because of one of two reasons. We have run into something that we have not yet come to understand or accept about ourselves. Or we are addicted to the charge of fighting for fighting's sake alone. We're addicted to drama. We're addicted to chaos. Often, it's both. In fact, I have not seen a situation or a circumstance where it hasn't been both yet. The sneaking thing is that this is the thing we do not want to admit to ourselves, that we get high off of fighting. Humanity is so addicted to the hormones that are released during the fight or flight response cycles that it will do anything collectively to continue to stimulate that hormonal release, to push that button, to get its high. It will do anything, even trigger its own ultimate demise. We're so addicted to fight. We're so conditioned to be addicted to it that we actually go out of our way to trigger it, to trigger the response, to create drama. Drama and fighting are addictions. Drama and fighting also indicate to us the discord that remains unresolved within us. We're addicted to discord, disharmony. A discord that we have not yet harmonized through our own understanding, much less accepted and released and let go. And there is a third dynamic that lies within our fighting. Isn't it a fact that whatever it is we're fighting with, it is because we inherently believe that we are compelled to control it or dominate it, be it an object, an outcome, a situation, or another living being? By golly, I need to control this situation. By golly, it's within me to manifest an outcome for this situation. By golly, I can manifest this. I can control it. I can drive it. I can dominate it. I can overcome. Isn't that the greatest epic battles of our history, that we are overcomers, that we are survivors, that we can overcome any situation? So we create these situations in which we can strive to overcome. That's the great game we play. However, as soon as we begin to fight, we find that the fight already controls us. Whenever we seek to control the object, the situation, the outcome, the person, we're already within its control. We've become enslaved to it. Anything that we feel compelled to control or compelled to fight with already controls us, simply because of our addiction. Essentially, it means that we are trying to control a thought or emotion or a person or an object within our sphere of influence so that we can push that button to get our high, so that we can trigger our release, so that we can feel that flush. Anything we try to tie down, anything we try to manipulate, coerce, control, or force to bend to our will, already has its noose around us and is tightening its grip. We are enslaved. We are in service and enslaved. As soon as you begin to understand this idea, this concept, then you begin to realize that our entire approach to life, how we've been trained, how we go about improving ourselves, fixing ourselves, working on ourselves, overcoming ourselves, may just be slightly askew. In fact, it is misconstrued. because we are living on autopilot, asleep, controlled by our own addictions, running from one dramatic experience to the next, reacting rather than being proactive. Instead of creating, we are reacting. We do this without conceptualization, understanding what it is we are really fighting, much less why. Why we're being triggered to fight. That which you do not control within yourself controls you. Wherever you try to control outside of yourself already controls you. We are automated and mechanical in all of our reactions to a variety of stimuli. We think we might have a choice, and in fact, my husband eloquently described to me, you think you have a choice, but you have no choice because you are compelled by your own karma to move in the opposite direction of which maybe perhaps you should. I laugh at that mainly because I don't believe in such a thing as karma, but I also laugh at that because I do believe we have free choice. It's just that sometimes we're so automated in our responses to things that we don't give ourselves the option to have a free choice. Until we have awakened enough to give ourselves a free choice, we are automatic and controlled by our own responses. Because the minute we encounter something that isn't to our liking or our desires, our immediate response is to run away from it, control it, dominate it, fight it, or repel it through pushing it away from us in order to free ourselves from what we believe or we claim is the discord or disturbance outside of ourselves. Many self-proclaimed enlightened beings seem to do this frequently. If I do not view it, it does not exist. If I do not experience it, it does not exist. The disturbance, though, isn't necessarily in the thing outside of ourselves. It's not in the person. It's not in the animal. It's not in the piece of equipment that you're so frustrated with or angry over. The disturbance, the discord, the disharmony, the addiction, it all lies within you. You have not yet come to a place of understanding and acceptance about something about yourself. And therefore, the game of fighting and the dramatics will continue to consume your life in endless cycles because you are addicted and automated by it. And addicted to it. So what happens to a person when she or he recognizes, what a sheer waste of time this game really is, this addiction really is? What happens when they hit ground zero, bottom out, and they realize the sheer waste of time and energy that has been spent in all that cycling up and fixing and dramatizing and creating chaos and fighting and fixing and healing and all of that overcoming. And all that complaining and all that anger and all that drama. You will come to a point along your journey where you come to understand how absolutely futile and fruitless it is to go through life seeking out reasons for your hurt and why you suffer. Because the truth is, you simply don't need to. You'll also come to a point where you realize how absolutely futile and fruitless it is to fix everything that comes your way, or heal it, or rescue it, or save it, much less save yourself. You'll come to realize a completely different way to live, to be, and to experience life. Another way is possible for us as humanity. In fact, it's not only possible, it is our most natural state of pure being, and it is effortless. This is a way of life where we don't have to fight any longer, because we do not choose to fight. We can enjoy life at the deepest level without needing to fix, help, or heal ourselves or anyone else, because we realize that we are all as we are, bountiful, beautiful, and naturally blissful. We don't have to fight. We don't have to put the good fight together. We don't have to fight the good fight. We don't have to fight wrongdoing and discontent and anger and and frustration. We don't have to go there anymore. You don't have to be addicted to fighting, and you don't have to be addicted to drama. You don't have to be addicted to suffering. You can choose another path. And when you experience someone who has the experience of being boundless and sacred and beautiful and blissful and joyful and demonstrates unconditional love and acceptance and compassion for any person in her or his sphere, it seems to start to change the paradigm that you've held. When you experience that energy, that resonance, that safety, that presence of being, that simple, effortless joy, is something that you demand for yourself. You want that for yourself, and you begin to seek it out. How do I get there? How do I get that? How do I achieve that? How do I get it? Where does it come from? Instead of fighting and conflict raging away within and wasting needless energy and frittering it away, instead of allowing that discord to be the driving force of your life, I want you to imagine for a moment what life might be like without drama, without fighting, without the charge, without the addiction, without creating conflict where conflict need not exist, coming to a state of acceptance and going, so this is as it should be, and we will accept this, and we will move on, and we will make it work for ourselves. How peaceful would that be instead of, I can't believe they did that to me. I'm going to get them for that. I'm going to prove that justice will prevail. I will fight this. Might feel good. You might be in for a years-long battle. Or you can just go, okay, well, let life be and let it go. What might it be like for just a moment if you were simply to just be and look at the stars and experience the smell of the flowers and love all that is there to love and accept all that there is to accept? Instead of trying to change things all the time outside of yourself and external circumstances, why not change things from within? Fighting does nothing but expend a lot of energy needlessly. It is an experiment, nothing more. It's not good or bad. It's an addiction, like any other addiction. However, this experiment tells us something about ourselves. It tells us how we allow our physical nature to control our spiritual experiences. I don't necessarily believe fighting is good or evil. I don't really have a particular opinion one way or another. It's just a thing, like anything is. Just like marijuana isn't a good thing or an evil thing. It's just a plant. It's what you choose to do with it. It's your actions, your choices, that can label the thing, not the thing itself. We label something only because of the knife-negating effects our choices have upon ourselves and others about a thing or an experience. So I may call a thing life-affirming versus life-negating, but not good versus evil, for that is all we are really talking about, whether an experience is life-affirming or life-negating, whether it is optimal or not, whether an outcome or an experience is optimal or not. It may take a challenge to learn anything from something you choose to resist. And after all, that's what fighting is all about. It's about resisting something that is happening to you because you believe you are a victim in some way. And a victim has no choice. A slave has no choice. And as long as you're a slave to your emotions, as long as you're a slave to your circumstances, as long as you're a slave to your experiences, as long as you're a victim, how can you have a choice? And many people don't want to have choices. They don't want the experience of free choice. Because with that comes responsibility and accountability. And oh my gosh, those things are scary to us. We'd rather have Big Brother watching over us, telling us what we can and cannot do. So we can play the game of child and be like little miniature adults rather than fully functioning divine, sacred beings creating our life as we see fit. Some people say it's impossible to learn anything from resistance. I say it's not impossible to learn from something you resist. You're just choosing to make something an extremely difficult experience in your life simply because you may be addicted to the turmoil that ensues and the flush that you get, the hormonal flush that you get out of it. It's your tiny mind controlling you, you not controlling your tiny mind. And whatever we resist or deny will persist in our life until we acknowledge its aspect within ourselves and come to a place of acceptance and understanding. Whenever you're angry about someone having an addiction, it's because, my dear, you're addicted. Think about that for a moment. There is no such thing as truth. So if you're a truth seeker, I'm sorry to disappoint you. There are many others out there that'll promise to teach you some secret truth to life and all that there is outside of it. There is none of that but what you manifest for yourself. There's no such thing as truth. There is no such thing as pure answers. After all, you are the great creator of your life, and you are the great observer. And your observations will always be tinged by your perceptions of those observations. There is no such thing as objectivity, and there is no such thing as truth. Only perceptions, only understanding. There is no such thing as pure knowledge. You are the great creator, you are the great writer, you are the great architect. There's no one above you and no one below you. And I also don't believe that you're here incarnated into this physical life over and over and over in order to learn lessons. The lessons will never be over, for we are infinite. We're certainly here to experiment and explain and play and explore and maybe share a little insight that we've gained along the way. And certainly there are those who believe they are here to learn lessons, and for them, the lessons will be harsh and sharp and may cause endless suffering for them. And I don't believe either that we are here to process or heal ourselves or one another or this earth. She's perfectly capable of healing herself and ridding herself of whatever plagues her. This may fly in the face of whatever you've believed about for years about your life purpose, that you're here to help people. You're not. I'm not here to help you. I'm here to give you tools and strategies to live to your fullest potential, whatever that potential may be, and create effortlessly whatever it is you choose to create. But I'm not here to teach you how to help people. I'm just here to teach you how to get back into yourself and bring that self, that full potential awareness of being, to light. And allow that to shine through. I've come to this after years and years of experiencing helping and rescuing and saving. And this is what I believe my purpose was for years. And I don't believe we're here to do that. Every person, every living being are here to encounter the five elements of life itself, to experiment, to experience, to expand, to explore, and to create. As we experiment, we experience. We gain in mastery and elevate ourselves and one another and expand our light. You'll notice I didn't say lessons. We are engaged in experimentation. Experiments are neutral. Lessons, however, are not. So if you're resisting or fighting the experiment, you've lost neutrality. You don't like it. It can't be happening to you. You refuse it. Well, okay. You can choose to do that, but it'll persist until you choose to come to a place of acceptance and understanding. If you've decided you must exercise control over the experiment and thus your experience in life, you've created a lesson for yourself. And I'm sorry, but how many scientists would really make serious breakthroughs if they are controlling the outcome of the experiment or being controlled by others? Not too many. We're not here to control or be controlled. For as long as you try to control, you will wind up being controlled. And whatever it is you focus the most upon, that is what will be drawn to you. So we're here to experiment in physical form. We're here to be creators in our physical natures and physical form. We manifest as creators upon this plane of experience. That is why we are in the bodies we've chosen to be in. It's just that most of us forgot this. We have experiments to perform to expand our wisdom and understanding. We're here to play. We're here to have fun. We're here to be delighted in our experiences and experiments. We're here to be blissful and joyful and to enjoy all that is made available for us to enjoy. We're also here as stewards to watch over the charge that has been given to us. That charge being this earthly plane. We're not here to dominate it. We're not here to dominate the stars or rule the planet or destroy it. We're simply here to be and be a part of it. No, we're not here to be our own. We're not here to heal or be healed. Although some people believe that that's their calling. And that's okay. That's at their level of awareness. That's their level of awakening. Accept that. Understand it. Be compassionate about it. Be joyful that they are there to assist those in the midst of their own drama. Here, this is an elevational experience of sacred living for enlightened beings. We are here to be our own watchers, our own observers, our own guides, our own experimenters, our own creators, and playfully explore all that is possible to explore here. We're not here to fight each other. We're not here to war over each other. We're not here to control all the little resources that we really actually don't even really require for sustaining life in a very healthy, beautiful manner. No thing is good or evil here, holy or damned. All experiments are sacred in the eyes of the infinite. So what does it mean to be in a natural state of being, of wildness, of wonderment, of awe? What does it feel like to be your natural, joyful, bliss-filled, delightful self? That's for you to determine. The first step in letting go and freeing yourself is when you come to the realization of how priceless self-compassion, self-awareness, and self-understanding is. When you understand the self, you can come to understand that which is selfless. For without self, there is no selfless. And in that selfless state of being, you become that which you are. Selflessness. And this is when most individuals first experience an awakening, a state of light, a state of delight. As they touch the state of bliss, sometimes perhaps for the very first time in their lives. Now, unlike many other teachers out there, I'm not going to teach you knowledge or self-knowledge. Knowledge itself is not the end-all or be-all. Knowledge is something perceived by the tiny brain. It's something you can pick out of a book. It's something that you can listen to. It's something you can learn from, a lesson. That's knowledge. That's not understanding. That's not compassion. That's not acceptance. Knowledge is a masculine-oriented, focused approach to spirituality. There is no such thing as self-knowledge. The tiny brain, which is so currently caught up in the illusion and addictions to the life that you've created up to this point, is that it simply cannot perceive anything but that. There is, however, such a thing as self-awareness and self-awakening. Understanding and compassion, these are things that come from the heart-centered state of being. That which we understand, we can have compassion for. We can even get to a point along our journey to have compassion and true acceptance, even for something we cannot understand or know, because we have come in alignment with our true nature, our infinite nature, our natural state of being. We accept it as it is for another, because they are simply a part of our shared infinite nature and our shared existence, and are bringing to us an aspect of experience that maybe perhaps we ourselves cannot embark upon by ourselves. True self-awareness comes from the very point when a person makes a choice to free themselves up to explore the fivefold path of their life existence and give themselves the opportunity to meet their infinite nature in a single pinnacle moment, thus forever being transformed. Here we don't use the words refuse or deny, and we don't use the words that speak to authority or true knowing or control. That's all masculine-oriented paradigms that we don't speak about too much here. We're here about balancing the feminine aspects and the softer aspects of spiritual nature with the masculine aspects of spiritual nature. We're not here to dominate or control or say that this path is the only path. Because as soon as you do either of these, any of these things, refuse or deny or control or dominate or have authority, you're creating conflict. You simply make a choice. You simply make a declaration that you will create within yourself limitless possibilities for your fivefold path to emerge effortlessly. Now, so far, you've realized that I'm not going to teach you self-knowledge. I'm not going to teach you truth. I'm not going to teach you how to refuse or deny something. I'm not going to teach you authority. I'm not going to teach you all of this stuff that other people are teaching you. So, what is it I am going to teach you? This is what you're asking. Okay, so you're not going to teach all this stuff. Then what are you teaching? Well, the path that I've embarked upon, the path of sacred living and delightfulness of being, really only simply relies on this, the path of being you. All is one, and one is all, and all life is sacred, and all life deserves the opportunity to freely encounter his or her life experience to its fullest potential. The first step to letting go is coming to a point of awakening and experiencing those first awarenesses of your limitless selflessness. Once you experience this, once you experience this natural space of awe and delight, you begin to gain a new relationship with all of life, a sacred, infinite relationship as a sacred, infinite, divine being. You begin to treat yourself different and others different, with greater humility, with greater respect, with greater reverence, and with sacredness. And this in turn begins to transform all your relationships with other people. The second step out of self-awakening and self-awareness is born a new relationship with the sacredness of all life. And this comes from within. Do you understand? It doesn't come from any externally created situation that you've created for yourself. This doesn't come from crisis. This doesn't come from overcoming all odds. This comes from within. This new freedom and this new relationship all comes from within. You are no longer trying to prove to yourself or others anything. You don't have to prove to yourself or others that who you've believed yourself to be, which is simply a definition created by your tiny mind, actually knows something to be true. Because no one honestly knows anything, truly. And honestly, anyone who proclaims to know a thing to be true could very much still be sitting on the ground right now having a fit with an inanimate object, like a lawnmower or a cell phone. They're very knowledgeable. They know it to be true. Dang it, they know it. So at this stage, we laugh. We joyfully laugh and we just go, as it is, thus it should be. We are, after all, we are infinite spiritual beings having a human experience. And it is laughable. It is joyful. It is funny. It is humorous. And the infinite is nothing if not humorous. So at this stage, we're going to dispense with the idea that anyone really knows anything more or less than another person. All people have access to infinite knowledge, infinite wisdom, and an infinite collective consciousness. And we all draw down bits of that that we use to run our experiments in our life and joyfully experiment and play and create. Whatever talent is, it is merely an interest pursued. It's merely a facet drawn down from the infinite and used through your physical nature to explore and experiment whatever it is you choose to explore and experiment for yourself. The only differences between people is merely different stages and levels of awareness and understanding. That's it. There is no one smarter or dumber than you. There is no one who is stupid. There is no one who is brilliant. There's no one who is a genius versus an idiot savant. We don't even use those words anymore. There is special wisdom and special insight to be gained in every encounter with all of sacred life. Knowledge is something the mind seeks out. Truth is something the mind seeks to perceive. The mind sees things in black and white, good and bad, categorizes everything, must have a category, must have labels. Everything must fit in its own little special box, and if it can't fit, then it doesn't exist. So I must dispense with it, I must disown it, I must ignore it, I must refute it, I must repel it, I must take it out. And anything I don't like, anything that creates chaos in my life, la 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 la, oh my God, I can't handle it. That's your tiny mind. The mind seeks. The spirit, the soul, it does not seek out knowledge, for it already knows everything it needs. It does not seek out truth, for the spirit within all of us already knows the truth. It does not seek out love, because it already is love. It does not seek out acceptance, because it already has accepted. It does not seek out understanding, because it already understands. It does not seek out pleasure, because it is pleasure. Seeking is a mind-driven activity. Healing is a mind-driven activity. Fixing is a mind-driven activity. Fixating on something wrong to make it right is a mind-driven activity. None of that's spiritual. None of that is truly spiritual practice. It's all of it is mind-driven, mind-created. So first comes self-awakening. Then comes self-awareness of the selflessness of all life. And out of these two things combined, as with anything, two things must be combined to make a new whole, is born a new relationship with the sacred in all of us. Out of this new relationship with the sacredness of life comes a new level of understanding about yourself as a divine and sacred being, which then gives you yet another thing. These two things combined then create something else anew. This gives you a new sense of the delight in life, a new sense of effortlessness to your life, a new sense of empowerment to your life, a new sense of freedom that you never experienced before. New awakening, new awareness, new relationship, new understanding, new effortlessness, which births again yet a new level of awakening, yet a new level of awareness, yet a new level of relationship, yet a new level of understanding, yet a new level of effortlessness. And it goes again and again and again and again. I call these the five pillars of sacred living and true spiritual power. That which allows a person to awaken, to let go, to be, and to do what is always within his or her heart or spirit, to be and do what is for the highest and most optimal expression of their natural light and inborn delightfulness of being. We're not going to use words like authority here. Sorry, none of that's going to exist. I'm not part of that paradigm. I'm so sorry. If that's what you're looking for, that's not what the Sacred Living Center is about. That's not what we're here for. We cannot have authority over one another, much less over ourselves. We can only be as we are. Authority is part of an old language, an old paradigm, an old term that seeks to control. And we cannot control anything except our own reactions to the ebb and flow that is the life force in this infinite multiverse. And we're going to be talking about new awakenings, new awareness, new relationships, new understandings, and new effortlessness of the delightfulness of being. And all of these things contribute to you to experience life as a sacred, divine, infinite being and experience new delight in your life, new bliss in your life, and encounter life on this new sacred living path. Now let's leave behind the old spiritual dogma. Let's leave behind all the old identities we've long associated with about truth, seeking, authority, divinity, and holiness. Let's leave behind us the old skins that no longer serve us. Let's leave behind the laws. Let's leave behind all this old stuff. Let's lay down our burdens behind. Let's lay it down at the feet of our infinite nature, for it is within us to do so, and allow a new life from within to be born anew, that we might strike up with joy and spontaneity at the awe and wonderment of life itself as we co-create new realities together and new communities together and explore those things together. Oh, what a wonderful thing it would be if you could allow yourself to remember who and what you truly are. And remember that you are not here on this earth to serve any person or anything, and that you are not here to fight. And you're not here to conflict. You're not here to resolve those things. And you're not here to heal anything or fix anything that's broken. And you're not here to justify. And you're not here to be justice. And you're not here to serve. Doesn't that free you up to experience life in a completely different manner? You may find yourself wandering about, knocking about your life, going, well, if that's not my purpose, then what is? Oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. Seeking, seeking, seeking again. Oh, I got so fixated on that. I thought that's what it was. No. That's your tiny mind again, fixating. You're not here to serve any person or anything but your own infinite nature. Now, this doesn't mean of you that you have the permission to go ahead and just be as selfish as you want. Quite the opposite, in fact. For in true service to yourself as your infinite being, you are automatically in service to all others around you. But not to fulfill their destiny, and not to fulfill some agenda they have, but to serve them through light, to give them light, to be light, give them joy, bliss, affection, compassion. Sometimes that's all anyone needs, just to be accepted as they are. Most times that's all anyone needs, to be able to align themselves back up again. Treating yourself as a divine being of light, as a divine creator of light, you're automatically humbled by that light to be that and emanate that all around you, not only for your highest and greatest good, but for the highest and greatest good of all that exists around you. Realize this, and here's a nice little allegory for you. The tree, by growing to its fullest potential, doesn't it serve all that is around it? Doesn't it produce fruit and seeds aplenty? Doesn't it provide shelter for birds and squirrels and all others who require of it? Doesn't its roots sink deep into the ground, protecting the soil from erosion? Doesn't it drop its leaves to fuel the earth around it, which in turn fuels it? It gives of its all by it being who it truly is. It's not in its nature to serve or to stoop and to try to slave and weigh and bend away and try to please others. It's only there to please itself, to stretch to its fullest height in its inborn glory and nature. And as it does so, it is sovereign in its sacred work as a tree. You're not here to be anything other than who and what you are already born to be. That's it. And it does not serve you or your highest good to stoop to serve a system or a person or a situation or a circumstance that demands you to compromise your integrity, your moral compass, or your own sense of true self-worth. If anything you are doing is life-negating for yourself or others, you must stop now and re-examine why you are continuing to contribute to life-negating experiences upon this earth here and now. Why? What is it serving? Your physical survival? No. That's your tiny mind's belief. But if you were to examine it with your heart, with your spirit, you would know that to be false. We have forgotten our true self and sovereignty because it's been indoctrinated into us that we must do whatever it takes to obtain whatever it is we believe we need to obtain some semblance of control over the world for our own physical survival. Paycheck, money. That's the number one reason why most people do the things they do. Money. Because they are so fearful that without money, they cannot survive. Unfortunately, that which inadvertently will ultimately contribute to humanity's imminent self-execution, if we continue on this dysfunctional path, will also contribute to your own. The path of fighting in fear for protecting some illusion we have about our society's physical survival for much longer will contribute to our own spiritual, ethical, and heart-based demise. Number one thing people die of, there's two things. Heart-related disease, which is a spiritual condition, and cancer, which is also a spiritual condition. The cancer that is so pervasive in our society is a cancer that's eating away at our very soul and our very nature. If you set out to control and dominate the illusionary world that you exist within, that you've agreed to exist within, that you've agreed to participate in, you've automatically become controlled and dominated by that illusion. That which you set out to own, dominate, and control ends up owning, dominating, and controlling you, and you become a slave. You lose the ability to manifest your own life as a sovereign and sacred divine being. In our human nature, we are programmed from birth by our society to dominate that which we are in fear of. We believe that by dominating it, we are showing our courage and our strength to overcome. That's our belief that's been conditioned by our society. However, we only end up demonstrating our own depth and fear and insecurities over our own physical nature. The external conditions around you will always dictate to you who you are and how good you are, how successful you are, how great you are, what you were supposed to do. Whatever physical conditions and external conditions you set yourself up in order to fight the good fight, well, these will all eventually become your own judge, your own jury, and your ultimate executioners. You will always have to fight to prove to yourself. You will always have to fight to overcome. And you will always have to fight in order to work hard. You will always have to fight to be a slave because it's so against your natural inborn nature to be so. You will always see in others the injustices that prevail because at some level they prevail within you. Instead of allowing a new relationship and a new effortlessness to blossom out, you will negate it all in an effort to prove the righteousness of your illusion and the wrongdoing of others, even though ultimately there is no right or wrong. Until you've aligned yourself and harmonized the discord that creates the chaos within yourself, you will continue to manifest and attract chaos and discord in your physical world. And pollution and stagnation and darkness will prevail. Whenever I'm asked to teach, I ask my infinite sacred being to provide a direction for my listeners and my students so that I can guide them to return to themselves from within. I'm not here to give you a lesson. I'm not here to preach to you or lecture to you. I'm here simply to guide you ever back to your own infinite and wise nature within. The heart of the sacred living path lies in this. Real spiritual power and real spiritual enlightenment has nothing to do with truth seeking, has nothing whatsoever to do with finding God or finding a sovereign being or finding truth in the midst of the crises that we create, in the midst of the wars that we fight, in the midst of the accumulation of stuff and things, simply because we cry out to someone or something outside of ourselves to save us. From ourselves or from the pain that we have chosen to label as a mistake or a misstep or a disease or a dysfunction that we chose, that we took in the midst of our darkness, created by our own blindness to our real nature. Real spiritual power, real enlightenment, is to live within the ever-present relationship of the sacredness of all, and emanating that lightness of being, which will always and forever shine light where only darkness once existed. This could no more make a wrong turn or misstep in life than a river can mistake its path back home to the ocean, for it is inevitably drawn and attracted to that which it is.
Thank you for listening to today's show, The Alchemist with Isis Jade. If you are intrigued by the strategies and products discussed, you can visit me on my website at alchemistco.com to purchase the world's only certified organic bioenergized tools, including aromatherapy, natural perfumes, skincare, protection sprays, emotional healing, and so much more. That's alchemistco.com. Now, to get access to our bioenergized pain relief line, you can find those on warrior-relief.com. You can also find me on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Facebook. Just type in Alchemist Co. and follow me there. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button to get access to our weekly podcasts, receive updates and information about our latest products, guided meditation, books, and courses, and get in on our VIP offers not available to the general public. Thank you so much for listening. Have a most delightful and wonderful day out there, living your very best life.